Hi, this is Tim O'Brien. This is number 0136 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0136. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Stu McMullen, who is the co-director of Hell Pizza, the company that created Pizza Roulette, where one slice of pizza is laced with two drops of a very, very, very hot sauce. How did this promotion come to be?
We've got a bit of a history of being quite immature in the kitchen. Many years ago, we used to, whenever it would come time for the end of the night with our staff and we'd be making them their dinner, because we'd always give them dinner at the end of the shift, Callum and I would always try to spice their pizza up or do particular things to them or lace them with things or put fish oil on it or do anything just to kind of mess around with our staff. So then it just all kind of evolved from there. We thought, hey, what a great idea. Why don't we just mess up one slice and then turn it on the rest of our customers?
Don Sammons lives in Buford, Wyoming. He's the mayor and the town's only occupant, and he's put the entire town up for sale. Why does a town of one even exist?
It's 25 miles in either direction to either Cheyenne or Laramie. There's about 32 people that get mail that's addressed to Buford, Wyoming, and they live within about a 15-square-mile radius of the actual city limits of Buford. And if they were to do away with the zip code for Buford, then all of those 32 people would have to drive an additional 25 miles into Laramie to pick up their mail. So in essence, some of them would be driving close to 100 miles a day just to pick up their mail.
Writer, model, and life coach Angela Paul talks about aging and why some people find it difficult to accept their age.
I think it's especially hard for American women because we live in a culture and a society that worships youth. So we've been fed this false message that, you know, aging is a disease, which is absolutely not the truth. I mean, aging is just part of the natural continuum of life. So I think that if people can learn to embrace whichever stage they happen to be at, they'll have a lot more pleasant experience than living in dread of your age.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0136, was Tim O'Brien, host and executive producer of Ripley Radio, which is about to have a milestone of its own. They're about to celebrate their 100th episode. And like the Stuff File, you can hear Ripley Radio on both CyberStationUSA.com and also on Stitcher, the smarter way to listen to radio. Thank you very much, Tim, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. And to you and the cast and crew of Ripley Radio, many, many, many more shows to come. Let's get to the Stuff File news, shall we? Well, China's national treasure, the giant panda, is about to become even more precious and valuable if one businessman succeeds in using panda poo to grow organic green tea he intends to sell for over $200 a cup. 41-year-old Chinese entrepreneur Anyan Shi grows the tea in mountainous Sichuan province using tons of manure from panda bears living at nearby breeding centers. 50 grams of the tea will cost you about $3,500. Given that most people use about 3 grams per cup of tea, that runs a little more than $205 per cup. That's the $200 a cup I mentioned earlier. And defended the steep prices, saying he would donate profits from the initial batches to an environmental fund. Future batches would be cheaper. Dressed in a giant panda suit to promote his tea, he also said, I thank heaven and earth for blessing us with this environmental panda tea. $200 a cup for tea? If you can afford it, you are definitely in that 1%, aren't you? Tea for people who have more dollars than cents. Anyway, most people never forget their wedding day. It's 100% guaranteed that 37-year-old Max K's new bride will never forget her wedding day. It seems Max deliberately set fire to the Cheshire, England hotel where his wedding reception was being held and thus has been jailed for 6 years. K admitted to starting the blaze at the Peckforton Castle Hotel after becoming massively drunk and then arguing over the bar tab. About 100 firefighters tackled a blaze at the 19th century country house built in the style of a castle. Almost 120 people, including 13 children, were evacuated during the fire. Kay was seen on surveillance video going into and coming out of a room that had been set up for a following day's wedding. Now, fire investigators later discovered the blaze had been started when curtains in that room were set on fire. No word on what his wife and the mother of his four children will do now. Now, considering that he got massively drunk, maybe the bar tab wasn't high enough. Okay, in the world of worst excuses, 41-year-old William Bliss should get a special gold medal. When police picked him up, drunk and naked, near Iowa City, Iowa, his excuse was that four unknown assailants had kidnapped him and forced him into carrying a nuclear bomb. The nude nuker allegedly had a blood alcohol level of 0.111 when he got to jail. At one point, during his arrest, he tried to make a run for it, causing one of the officers to fall and injure himself. Bliss later admitted that he had had 9 beers and had been drinking vodka throughout the day. He's now facing charges of interfering with and injuring an officer and public intoxication. Strangely, the officer never did find a nuclear bomb. Yes. It's odd how we often seem to have drunk people who feel the urge to be naked. Funny how that works, huh? Anyway, 36-year-old LaDondrell Montgomery was sentenced in Houston to life in prison for armed robbery despite his vigorous protests of innocence. However, about a week after his sentence was handed down, he was completely exonerated from the crime after it was determined he had an ironclad alibi that he had not mentioned during his trial. Turns out that when the crime was being committed, Montgomery was in jail, so it is impossible for him to have committed the crime. Once jail records were reviewed, Montgomery was free. The prosecutor hadn't checked the records before trial, and neither had Montgomery's own attorney. But that's because, again, Montgomery never mentioned it, mainly because, as he later told his lawyers, he had been in and out of jail so many times in his life that he just could not remember if he had been locked up at the time of the armed robbery. Yeah. Wow. Something tells me they should keep an open reservation for Montgomery. Sounds like he'll be back. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our first guest on the program, police in the Swiss town of Lucerne are looking for the maniac who has been terrorizing residents with well-placed severed pig's heads all over town. Horrified customers in a posh cake shop ducked for cover when the mystery attacker threw 3 pig's heads into the display cases, splattering pastries and sending blood everywhere. In an earlier attack, he threw a head at what witnesses say was a group of non-Swiss tourists. Police say they are checking local farms for anyone buying large numbers of pig's heads. Wow, throwing a pig's head brings new meaning to the term swine flu. Okay, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Hell Pizza in New Zealand has a hot new promotion, literally. They are offering Kiwis a gut-wrenching, mouth-watering, tear-jerking trip for their taste buds. They've created Pizza Roulette, a sort of Russian roulette where one slice of pizza has 2 drops of a very potent hot sauce added to it. Hell Pizza's co-director, Stu McMullen, who also organized this campaign, joins us on the line right now via Skype-to-Skype communication from New Zealand. Hi, Stu.
Hello, Peter. Nice to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you as well. So you have this promotion. I've seen the video where you have some footballers trying this pizza. That video is all over the place, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's actually everyone thinks that footballers are actually cricketers.
Cricketers.
They're a Wellington cricket team that we sponsor. So you probably don't know too much about cricket over there, but there are a bunch of guys that we sponsor here, and so we rope them in to actually get into the challenge first time.
Actually, I come from a West Indian background. We played cricket in high school, so there you go.
Good man.
Anyway, so. How did you come up with this promotion? I mean, you come up with wacky promotions all the time, but this takes the cake, literally.
Yeah, this is a new one, eh? Well, basically, it actually stemmed from many years ago. I guess we've got a bit of a history of being quite immature in the kitchen. And many years ago, we used to, whenever it would come time for the end of the night with our staff and we'd be making them their dinner, because we'd always give them dinner at the end of the shift. Callum and I would always try to spice their pizza up or do particular things to them or lace them with things or put fish oil on it or do anything just to kind of mess around with our staff. So then it just all kind of evolved from there. We thought, hey, what a great idea. Why don't we just mess up one slice and then turn it on the rest of our customers?
So when did you start doing this?
We actually only started last Monday. So the whole promotion started nationwide last Monday, but we've been doing this for years.
Okay. Because the reason why I ask is it was a story, for instance, CNN in North America did a story on it not too long ago, and I've seen stories in the papers and online, so it's getting a lot of buzz.
I tell you what, it went crazy. We launched it. All we did was actually put it on our Facebook page, and then we've got an internal email database with all our customers in New Zealand. We launched it on there, and then within literally a day, it was on New York Times, Time Magazine, CNN. It's been like the headline story in Taiwan on their main news network. It's just gone crazy.
Now, the people in New Zealand have to have a good sense of humor about this. The reason why I say that, I know in some countries, certainly in some states in the United States, people would be so quick to want to cause or start a lawsuit over this. Some people just don't have a sense of humor. Are you worried about that? Do you have to concern yourself with liabilities of any kind?
No, it's certainly New Zealand's not as litigious as America or Canada, for sure. But no, I mean, we certainly were worried because we're conscious of the fact that we used to do it to other people and screw with other people. So we thought, well, other people might do it to their friends as well. So for that reason, what we did was every time you order a Pizza Roulette pizza online or through the point of sale, we have a disclaimer on there. So we say, hey, look, you have to agree to these terms and conditions. And then when we actually finish the whole pizza, we seal the box closed with a sticker, and it acts in a way like software. So we came up with the idea from software packaging. You know, if you tear open this package, you agree to the terms and conditions. Well, it's pretty much along the same lines as that. If you tear open the pizza box, you've read the terms and conditions. You know what you're doing inside there.
Now, do I understand that you can actually turn part of the box into a small coffin?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And on the back it says, for your remains.
And I love the tagline, it doesn't cost, but someone pays.
It's pure gold. The thing with this campaign is, you know, as a retailer, is it works on so many levels. It has, like I say, it doesn't cost, but someone pays. It's a great message to get out there to people. It's social media. It's people playing with the actual game and videoing themselves and putting it up on social network sites. It upsells, which is fantastic. People, instead of buying a small pizza, will buy a big pizza. So everything about the mechanic of this whole promotion just works. You do so many things in business, and then sometimes you just hit on that one thing that just goes really well.
Okay, so you've only done this a little over a week now. Has it increased business?
Absolutely, hands down. Sales are rocketing now, eh?
And what about the poor guy or gal who gets that one slice? I mean, you must be getting tons of videos now from people who have experience this pizza.
Getting tons of videos. And then some people like hit up on our Facebook page and just say, well played, Hell Pizza, well played. So people are all over it. They absolutely love it. The funniest thing is when you actually get people who obviously are unassuming and not used to chili, but they kind of go, yeah, I'll play. And then they just get absolutely nailed.
Okay, so.
I've done this as well, Peter. And honestly, I was out for 45 minutes. I couldn't feel my mouth. And at one point, my knees started shaking. And Callum, my business partner, he did it, and we played the game together, and he got the next pizza, and he started crying uncontrollably for about 10 minutes, and then we just looked at each other and said, we've got to do it. This is gold.
see, this is the part that baffles me here. You just said you tried it, you did it, and then after you did it, you tried it again.
Yeah.
That's hell. That is hell. Definition of insanity, yeah.
So I guess based on your own performance, you are definitely getting repeat customers.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And the funniest thing of all was, even when we got those cricketer guys to do it, the best thing of all was we recorded it, and then right to the very end, he just mumbles under his breath, "You ruined my day." And I couldn't think of anything better.
Okay, so you gave a little bit of the experience you had. How long did it last for you? Like, when can you finally resume normal life after taking a slice of this pizza?
I was 45 minutes. Some people are 30 minutes to an hour. It really depends on the person. I was 45 minutes before I could even, you know, kind of concentrate on something else that wasn't just burning lips and tongue.
And is that the only sensation, burning lips and tongue?
Oh, no, you get a little bit head dizzy. As I say, my knee started going a little bit from under me, eh? But everyone's kind of a little bit different. But certainly, I mean, considering that 2 million Scoville units is the equivalent of US-grade pepper spray, it's going to nail you. It's going to knock you out.
And how exactly do you overcome this? Is there something you can do, or is there anything that actually makes it worse? Like, what do you drink? What do you do?
I actually think that drinking soft drinks and that actually makes it worse. And people think that drinking milk makes it better, but I just think you just got to battle through the pain. I think that's the only way through it, really, and kind of enjoy the ride at the same time.
Now, I'm going to put this as delicately as I possibly can. As you know, when somebody eats something that's very hot, there's a residual effect later on.
Well, actually, we haven't had too many reported cases of that, actually. But in hell, we already have 4 chili settings in hell. So we have flame. Whenever you order a pizza currently, we have flame kissed, and we also have forked tongue is the second chili setting, and then the third one's ring of fire. So it might be actually ring of fire you're referring to there.
Yeah, because some things do burn on entry and. On the way out as,
the afterburner.
As well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Afterburn.
I wouldn't be surprised if this is that, but we haven't had too many reports of that yet.
How long has Hell Pizza been around?
Oh, look, we've been going we're in our 15th year now. Wow. So, yeah, we've been going. We started in Wellington, and for the first 4 years we had one shop, and then we opened 3 shops 2 years after that, and then suddenly we opened 2.5 years, we opened another 60 restaurants. And it just went crazy in New Zealand, and then we've taken it a little bit around the world. So we've actually got one shop in Vancouver. We're just about to open another one in Vancouver, and they'll be playing Pizza Roulette there.
Yeah, I saw it on their website. People can check that out on the website as well, where they can find out more information. They're playing Pizza Roulette at their locations as well. I would assume, because if people have never heard of Hell Pizza, I think they've certainly heard about it now. So I wouldn't be surprised if you do a little bit more business as far as the franchises are concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we hope so. Well, Hell's a controversial brand. I mean, I don't know if you've looked into some of the other stuff we've done in the past, but we're the most complained about brand in New Zealand history with the Advertising Standards Authority. We've got some pretty insane stuff that we've done over the years. We're a bit pioneering as well. So this is obviously a pioneering game. So we haven't really seen this out anywhere else. And last year we released an interactive zombie venture, and it's up to 22 million views now. So yeah, pretty awesome.
I'm almost afraid to find out what you might do next.
Thanks, Peter.
Stu, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Very nice talking to you too.
Stu McMullen, co-director of Hell Pizza. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0136, and you'll find links to their website, which also has the video of the cricket team playing Pizza Roulette.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Viewer discretion is advised. But then again, why are you staring at a radio program?
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the mayor, owner, and operator of Buford, Wyoming. It's a town of only one, and the entire town is up for sale. Plus, Angela Paul, who is a writer, model, and life coach, will be on to talk about aging. And of course, there's an idiot of the day, so stay tuned for that. But right now, more Stuff File news. With me, Peter Anthony Holder, here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, anyone old enough to remember the wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana remembers that super long train on her dress, but it doesn't come close to the train that was on the wedding dress that just took the new world record in the Guinness Book. A hot air balloon floated over downtown Bucharest carrying a model wearing the dress and its 1.85 mile long train. No kidding. The event was organized by the dress's creators, the Andrei Salon Fashion House, and the organizers of this year's biannual wedding fair in Bucharest. Now, the train, which took 100 days to create, was crafted by a team of 10 seamstresses. The previous record holder was a Dutch designer, so that made the win all the more juicy for Romanians, as many are still angry after the Netherlands opposed their entry into the European Union's visa-free travel zone. Now, Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte recently demanded that Romania and Bulgaria do more to reform their justice systems and combat corruption and organized crime before he would support integration. Alan Karaman, who is an organizer of the wedding fair, said, "If the Netherlands does not allow us into Europe, we'll take them out of the world record book." Yeah, now that's showing him. Wow. Now, my only question is, since the model is wearing an almost 2-mile-long train while in a hot air balloon, what prevented this thing from just snapping her head back and breaking her neck? That's what I want to know. Anyway, ever thought it would be cool to fight zombies in a condemned shopping mall? I know, who hasn't, right? Well, your dreams can now be reality thanks to the website wish.co.uk. And yes, I've put a link to that site from my site if you want to go take a look at thestufffile.com. You'll have to travel to the UK, but for $120, you can actually fight off and shoot zombies in an abandoned mall that is scheduled for demolition. Now, to add to the eerie effect, part of the battle is played out in an abandoned children's play center. The zombie shopping mall experience lasts 3 hours, taking participants through an intense training regime with a police firearm squad. Richard Kershaw, co-founder of the website, said, "Our zombie boot camp sold out in days. We're expecting zombie shopping mall to be even more popular." Wow. What can I say? Zombies seem to be very hot these days, for all kinds of reasons. Anyway, calling 911 to complain that your wife won't go to bed and let you check out your Facebook page is not a terribly good idea. Just ask 57-year-old Doyle Hardwick of Land O'Lakes, Florida, who now sits behind bars for doing just that. Although arrested for misuse of 911, Hardwick also never showed up for his original 60-day sentence, so an arrest warrant was issued. And this isn't his first case of 911 abuse. In May of 2010, he called 911 for a ride to his daughter's house and also called to report that his neighbors had been defecating in old vehicle fuel tanks. You know, people tend to mature as they get older, but when you hear that a 57-year-old has been doing these idiotic things, you have to ask, what kind of a moron was he when he was younger? I had an urge to make him the idiot of the day, but I did not. That comes later. Anyway, an Oakdale, Minnesota high school student is being prevented from bringing his chosen date to this year's prom, mostly because she's a porn star. Surprisingly, the school has a problem with that. Senior Mike Stone apparently tweeted to one member after another in the porn profession seeking someone willing to go to the Tartan High School prom as his date. Finally, Megan Piper said that on her Twitter account that she would love to accompany the 18-year-old as long as Stone paid for her transportation from California. But Patty Phillips, superintendent of District 622, said in a written statement that Piper would be unwelcome. She cites the school's visitor policy that states that access is allowed unless, quote, the visit is not in the best interest of students, employees, or the school district, unquote. Apparently, dancing with porn stars is not in the students' best interest. Who knew? Meanwhile, our young Mr. Stone is not in any trouble at school for his unorthodox approach to getting a prom date. He just simply can't bring her. Wow. I sense a lawsuit coming down the pike somewhere, either from him or from the porn star. I'm just saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Lewis Helmberg III filed a lawsuit in Huntington, West Virginia in February against the Alpha Tau Omega fraternity and its member, Travis Hughes, for injuries Helmberg suffered in May of 2011 when he fell off a deck at the fraternity house. He had been startled and fallen backward off the railless deck after Hughes attempted to fire a bottle rocket out of his anus, and the rocket instead exploded in place. Ouch! About the only thing you can add to this is, what an ass. Really. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Wyoming is the U.S. state with the smallest population. However, there is one town in Wyoming that has the distinction of being really small. Buford, Wyoming has a population of just one. Don Sammons is the mayor, owner, and operator of the town, but now he plans to retire and move on, so the town is up for auction. On the line with us right now is Don Sammons from Buford, Wyoming. Hi, Don.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
A town of just one. Now, I believe the population when you first purchased the town was slightly larger, if not double.
It actually was. It was a town of seven. And, of course, it's the second oldest town in the state of Wyoming. And back in its heyday, 1866-67, there was about 2,000 people that lived there.
So when the population dwindled down to seven, never mind down to one, how did it even remain a town?
Well, because it is too, when I say too far, it's 25 miles in either direction to either Cheyenne or Laramie. And the people, there's about 32 people that get mail that's addressed to Buford, Wyoming, and they live within about a 15-square-mile radius of the actual city limits of Buford. And if they were to do away with the zip code for Buford, then all of those 32 people would have to drive an additional 25 miles into Laramie to pick up their mail. So in essence, some of them would be driving close to 100 miles a day just to pick up their mail.
Hmm. So how did you end up, oh so many years ago, owning this town?
Well, I originally moved to Buford 30 years ago, and I had bought a small ranchette about 3 miles south of the actual town of Buford, and used to trade there quite often on a regular basis, and it was owned by a family of seven. And it was like that for a total of 10 years. And in 1990, the gentleman that owned the town or the business so on passed away. And his wife and family didn't want to continue their family was back east. They wanted to move back east to where their family was at. So they had no interest in Buford any longer. And put it up for sale. It took me a couple of years to get together with them on a price, but in 1992 I purchased Buford, the entire town. And as they say, it's been history ever since.
What was the asking price for the entire town back then when you bought it?
Well, I don't want to get into any pricing. That's based on my auction company.
Okay.
We'll see what it's worth come April the 5th at high noon.
Okay. So I understand the bidding starts at $100,000 on April the 5th.
That's correct.
What does the town actually contain? What are they getting for whatever the winning bid will be?
Well, they're getting 10 acres of prime commercial interstate property with its own exit, which makes it unique right there. They're getting six buildings. They're getting a convenience store, a gift shop, a service station, all in one. And that's all been totally rebuilt as of 2004. It's all state-of-the-art. And then there is an office that used to be the Buford School from 1905. That has been remodeled and turned into my office. Then there's another building that is a three-car garage with a workshop. And that was the number two Buford store from 1895. I had that remodeled. And then there's an old cabin that I used for a tool shed, as well as a small barn. And then there's also a modular three-bedroom home, two-bath, that was built in 1994.
Now, over the years, how did you sustain yourself? I mean, is being mayor and I guess maybe running the convenience store your form of living, or did you do something else in addition to being the one guy in Buford?
Well, Buford used to, when I say be very active, it still is, of course. During the summer months, we'll get anywhere from about 1,000 to 1,500 people a day through it. In the wintertime, of course, that goes down some. And since then, now, as I got closer to retirement, I did close down some of the businesses that I had. But I did have a 28-seat cafe that served breakfast and lunch. I also had a towing service and a small salvage yard, as well as RV camping and tent camping. And Buford sits next to two state parks and a national forest. So in the summer, we get a lot of people visiting the parks, camping out, and so on. So it's really a multifaceted operation.
I'm guessing Buford doesn't have a traffic light?
It does not.
Crime is very low?
Crime is zero.
And no one's threatened to move in right next door, like, say, a McDonald's or a Walmart?
Not as of yet, although, you know, sometimes secrets do get out.
So how have you sustained yourself all these years? I mean, you've already mentioned what you did for a living, but was it kind of lonely living all by yourself in Buford?
Well, you know, when you think about it, I mean, people think because you're alone that you might be lonely. And actually, that's two different things. People that can live right in the middle of a million people can be very lonely. During the day, of course, Buford had just loads of traffic going through it from people from all over the world. I got people in from Russia, from China, from Switzerland, Europe, you name it. And it was just amazing, the conversations that we would have. And then, of course, that was during business hours. And then after a 10-hour day, when you went home, you were kind of looking forward to peace and quiet and not really talking to anyone and just relaxing a little bit. So I never found that to be a problem. And I'm also a Buddhist. And by being a Buddhist, of course, our philosophy is of one of being happy and trying to make the people around us happy also. So, you know, if you have that inner happiness, then it's much easier to be by yourself.
So when you move from Beaufort after the town is sold, anywhere you go to, and I don't know where you're going, but wouldn't it seem by comparison crowded?
You know, it probably is going to, and that's, I guess, something that's going to take some getting used to. I've thought about that quite a bit. I don't really feel that it's hit me yet as far as actually leaving. I'll probably realize that come April 5th, once it's sold. But, you know, I love being with people, and that was one of the things with Beaufort is, even though I did have my peace and quiet in the evening, I wasn't concerned with traffic jams and so on. I still got to talk with many, many, many people, and that part of my life was never never quiet. So talking with people, I really look forward to that. As far as having a neighbor within a stone's throw, that's probably going to take some getting used to. But, you know, we all go through different chapters in our life, and after 30 years, I believe that I am ready to start this new chapter, and I think one of the things that I'm going to be doing in my semi-retirement is writing a book about Beaufort and all the experiences that I had there and so on.
Now, do you know where you're going to be living?
As of now, I don't. I'm looking in northern Colorado because about 80 miles from Beaufort, it's more populated, but it's close to the area that I really like, and we'll see. But as far as if that's where I'm going to stay for this whole next chapter of my my life, I can't say that because there's other places that that I have thought about traveling and seeing.
Besides the fact that the bids will start at $100,000, will there be any other restrictions on how people can bid or who can bid?
Well, that is all set up by the auction company. That is all set up by the auction company.
Okay, and that is the Williams Auction Company, right?
Correct, yeah. So, people can go online at williamsauction.com/Beaufort, and it has all of the photos, pictures, all of the land size, surveys, everything like that on there where they can see inside the home and see inside the business and so on.
And I believe people can also find more information by going to the website BeaufortTradingPost.com, correct?
That is correct, yeah. Beaufort, that website, if you Google Beaufort, Wyoming, that is, of course, the town of Beaufort. And the last time I checked, there was over 3 million pages that came up.
Wow. Well, we wish you success in your future. Now, you mentioned when you first got there were 7 people. Your son was also living with you, too, was he not?
Correct, yeah. He's moved also down in the area of northern Colorado where I'm closer to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll be closer to your son and back in a busier population zone. I thank you very, very much, Don, for taking the time to be on the program with us, and good luck and success with the auction coming up in April.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to, you know, to listen to my story, and I certainly appreciate that.
And maybe we'll get back in contact with you, by the way, when that book of yours comes out.
That'd be great.
Don Sammons, the mayor, owner, and operator of Beaufort, Wyoming. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0136, and you'll find links to Beaufort's website and also links to more of the information on the auction itself. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Earlier this month, a federal court issued a ruling that has many job providers scratching their heads and worried that it's going to make them targets of expensive lawsuits. The court said that the National Labor Relations Board, known as the NLRB, can order job providers to put up posters notifying workers that they can make all sorts of complaints about their employers to, you guessed it, the NLRB. But the same court said that the NLRB does not have the power to enforce the rule. How does that make sense? Many job providers fear that this ruling will now expose them to frivolous lawsuits. Did you put up the poster? Was it in the right place to be seen? It's easy to imagine the lawsuits. Let's be fair. However you feel about unions and collective action by workers, this court ruling doesn't clarify things. It muddies the water, and muddy water just breeds unnecessary lawsuits at a time when America needs to be focusing on creating new jobs. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we will talk about aging with writer, model, and life coach Angela Paul. And, of course, there is, as you always know, an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on in the program. But right now, we have some more Stuff File news to get to before we get to our next guest. A controversial Reebok ad poster has been removed from display at a German gym following widespread complaints. Now, the poster, which was intended to motivate people to exercise, read, "Cheat on your girlfriend, not on your workout." Instead, however, it was met with a consumer backlash, and the sportswear firm pulled the ad and acknowledged that it was offensive. They didn't think about this beforehand? The promotional campaign was just being tested in Germany, but thanks to social media, which is now, as you know, everywhere, Reebok is now getting complaints from around the globe. Way to go, guys. Anyway, tired of pieces of toast and cereal flakes, it seems that Jesus has decided to reveal his image in a power meter. In Claremont, Florida, a local woman says she noticed an image of Jesus in a nearby power box while she was praying on her back porch. The woman, who lives in a mobile home park, don't they all, called the discovery a blessing, especially with Easter drawing near. Now, neighbors were buzzing about the image, taking pictures of the non-working power box with their cell phones. "I have heard that he does appear in many places at many times," the woman said. "Maybe it's a sign he is soon coming, or maybe it will help lift other people up." Local media decided not to disclose the woman's name, lest someone think she's crazy. Good call. Meanwhile, I'll start believing in the sighting if the non-working power box suddenly started working again. There you go. And while we're on religion, Prophet Warren Jeffs of a breakaway Mormon cult is serving life plus 20 years in a Texas prison for raping two underage parishioners, but insists that his power has not been diminished. He was disciplined in December for making a phone call to his congregation announcing several decrees, including barring marriages from taking place until he can return to seal them and prohibiting anyone from having sex. Since Jeffs retains his Messiah status among many church members, and since life plus 20 years is a long time to wait, and since the cult is reclusive, it is difficult for outsiders to assess the level of sexual frustration in the compound. But let's take a minute to figure this out. Let's assume these cult clowns follow his word and never have sex again. By putting Jeffs in jail for life, you've pretty much wiped out the future of this sect. On the other hand, if somebody gets pregnant, they really have a lot of explaining to do. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. On the line is Angela Paul. She is a writer, model, and a professional life coach. And Angela joins us on the show to talk about aging. Most importantly, how to embrace and accept your age. Angela's on the line from California. Hi, Angela.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So is it a difficulty for some people to actually accept their age?
I think it's especially hard for American women because we live in a culture and a society that worships youth. So we've been fed this false message that, you know, aging is a disease, which is absolutely not the truth. I mean, aging is just part of the natural continuum of life. So I think that if people can learn to embrace whichever stage they happen to be at, they'll have a lot more pleasant experience than living in dread of your age.
But what you're describing to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, sounds like the impression that women and men, but more partly women, seem to have of themselves in a time that went by. And to be honest, people who were older back then really looked older and acted their age. as opposed to what I'm sure you believe, age is about attitude, not a number, correct?
Well, that's it. I mean, I know people who in their 20s who are ancient, and I know people in their 80s who are, you know, they've got such a joie de vivre, and they're great to be around, and they think young. And so for me, I think it always comes down to it's what you think. If you think old, you will feel old. So, you know, you really have to be mindful of what your thoughts are telling you. And, you know, and then you have to really shift your perception about aging, because really it's all in our perception. Everything's about our perception anyway, really, so, at the end of the day.
So it's mind over matter. But the question is it easy to get past that? Is it easier said than done?
I think it's, well, look, you know, like I said, again, we live in a culture that's definitely youth, you know, youth-based. And I think that for women especially, there's extra pressure here than there are in other countries. I think it's easier to age gracefully in Europe. And even in places, you know, like Japan, they have a designated, you know, Respect the Elderly Day. We don't have that here. And a lot of women feel that they get invisible once they reach 40, which is really quite sad, you know. So I think that you have to develop a real sense of yourself from the inside out, which means that you have to learn your self-worth at an earlier age. You have to have, you know, role models that you look to that inspire you, that are give you something to look to, that your model of what is aging gracefully for you, and then not be pulled and swayed by what the media and culture tells you, you know, beauty and age is supposed to be about. So really it's like developing that strength and a fierce determination from the inside out to take care of yourself, but also to just, you know, really trust your own perception of what you want your aging experience to be.
You mentioned the media, and I was going to ask that question next, and that is, what role does the media play in this? And has the media always played, in your estimation, a negative role in this when we go back in time, or is it a more recent phenomenon?
It's absolutely a recent phenomenon. I mean, first of all, we only had a few TV channels before. I mean, I'm from England, and we only had three. But, I mean, now, I mean, everywhere you look, and especially in you know, in California, it's very much focused on a specific kind of look. And I feel that people are inundated by these false messages of what aging is supposed to look like. And I think you have to really be very mindful when you look at beauty ads, television, you know, movies, and covers of magazines, when you see celebrities, because the fact is that everything has been retouched so much that none of it is real. And I think that people, especially women, do themselves a disservice when they look at this and buy into thinking that this is their standard that they need to move towards, when in fact it's taken a lot of retouching, makeup artists, hairstylists, to create one look. So I think we really have to be smart and really, you know, look through all of that stuff, you know, because it is. You've got to be out of strong mind to combat all the stuff that's coming at you.
You mentioned earlier that you've met people who are in their 20s who act and sound old. So I just want to know the problems that people have with spending too much time dealing with that number. Is it something that is inherently within them and has always been there, or something they developed with age?
I think it's something that you develop with age, because when you're born, you don't have a stigma associated with your age. Well, granted, when you're young, you probably want to be older. And then as you get older, a lot of people want to be younger. But what I'm finding is that a lot of people, even women, like I said, in their 20s, there's such a pressure, even at that young age, to feel like they never match up physically. So whether it's being thinner or looking younger, it's much, much more pressure than it was, I think, you know, 20 years ago. And it's pretty scary, because girls really have to develop, you know, this sense of who they are in a much deeper way in order for them to go beyond all of that pressure, because it's coming at them all the time. If you look at, you know, television these days, music videos, everything is over-sexualized, and I think it's a very, very scary time for young girls these days.
Is it more difficult in this day and age to want to be able to be young, act young, feel young, without doing it via surgery?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at the media, look at the television, look at all the news anchors. Everybody, especially in America, looks like they've spent a lot of time at their, you know, at the doctor's office having something tweaked. If you were in England and other places like that, when you watch television, people look real. Here in America, there's this sort of false standard, and I think that women especially are tweaking a lot of stuff on the outside, thinking that that's going to, you know, keep them looking young and sexy and therefore make them more viable. But it's really coming from a place of desperation. Instead of being, you know, owning each passage they happen to be at and recognizing that really it's confidence and poise that it is really sexy and alluring, not desperately clinging to one's youth.
More and more women, I mean, I think of the actresses that I looked at when I was growing up. If someone were to say today that people like Jane Fonda, Raquel Welch, Susan Sarandon, Helen Mirren, Julie Christie, if people were to say to me 40 years ago, this is what a senior citizen looks like, no one would believe it. 40 years ago.
Well, it's interesting because the women that you mentioned, for me, I put into two categories because I know that Jane Fonda's had a lot of work done and she's very, very honest about it. I think she's had a good cosmetic surgeon because it looks natural, but she's very clear that she has had facelift and a lot of different stuff. And Raquel Welch has definitely had a lot of work. Helen Mirren, on the other hand, I believe has not, and to me she looks like a more of a European version of what to me is graceful aging. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm 57. I take good care of myself. I haven't had any cosmetic surgery, and I don't plan on doing that. But I am very mindful about what I eat and exercise, and we have much more information available to us now than we ever did before. So a woman of 50, you know, probably does look a good 10 to 15 years younger if she's taking good care of herself. So we can look good at any age, but it's not so much about looking good as it is feeling fit and healthy.
So what is the biggest point you want to get out to the audience, the biggest lesson that you want them to learn, especially if you're speaking to those who think that age is a number and not attitude?
Well, I'd have to say that it really is don't get old in your head, because that's where it all starts. If you think you're old, you will feel old, and everything that you do will come from that feeling. So you really have to try every day to switch your attitude about what your perception is, and that starts by, again, taking care of yourself from the inside out, develop an inner life, and then develop role models that are inspiring to you, women of accomplishment, women who maybe are older than you that you aspire to, that you know, that they represent qualities that are not so much part of pop culture, that give you something to look forward to as you get older and you reach the same age that they happen to be at. I think that, you know, again, it's a big disservice to think of aging as an illness. Illness is a part, you know, aging is a part of life, and you know, if we're open to it and we enjoy every passage, then it can be quite a joyful experience.
One last question: Is it possible that sometimes when people say that it is a number, and they're concerned about aging, they use that as an excuse in that? Perhaps along the way, they weren't necessarily happy with who they were. And it's not just a physical thing. But as age manifests itself, they use that as a crutch as to being not happy with who they are.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we can go through life finding all kinds of excuses not to do something or not to change. And age will often be the use, you know, excuse that a lot of people use. Oh, I'm too old to do this. And, I'm, you know, it's always been that way, so it's going to be that way. And I'm too old for this. So, yeah, it is a crutch, it's an excuse. I think everybody has to take personal responsibility for their health and for their own aging experience. So bring it back to that responsibility of what you think, and that will then fuel your action of how well you take care of yourself, which at the end of the day is, you know, going to reflect how you live your life and how well you age.
Angela, it's been a pleasure talking to you. People can go to your website at angelapaul.com and check out all kinds of very interesting information. I thank you very, very much for being on the show with us.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Life coach Angela Paul. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0136, and you'll find links to Angela's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Jason Bacon, age 41, was arrested in Eureka, California in March after responding to a classified ad for a used motorcycle by offering to trade about $8,000 worth of his homegrown marijuana for it. Now, according to an officer at the scene, Bacon told a deputy, "I know you can't sell it, but I thought it was okay to trade it." Wow, why would someone think that contraband, which you can't legally sell, can't legally grow, can't legally own, or can't legally use, would be okay to trade? One reason and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0136. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0136. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show online, on the air, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes.
Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.